Hello and welcome to a new episode of On Translation. This is your host, Dr. Mohammed Al-Bakri, and this is episode 14, entitled How Not to Review a Translation. My guest for this episode is Dr. Hans Gabriel, a professor of German studies, and since 2023, he serves as Michael and Amy Thiemann Distinguished Professor at the University of North Carolina, UNC School of the Arts. You may remember that Hans was the moderator of the debate on updating Shakespearean language, recorded for episode 13. Hans, welcome to the On Translation podcast.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, from what I know about you, you have written several reviews of English translations. Most recently, a 1,000-page new translation of an Austrian modernist novel. Can you say the name of the novel?
Yes, it's Die Strudelhofstiege by Heimito von Doderer and translated by Vincent Kling in New York Review Books.
And what's the title in English?
Well, the Strudelhofstiege is an untranslated title. It refers to a monumental staircase, outdoor staircase in Vienna.
Maybe I'll do an episode on translating titles later on. But I also know that you are working on your own English translations of several of the novellas of 19th century Swiss German author Gottfried Keller.
Yes, and actually the fact that there's an Austrian, you've mentioned an Austrian novel and a Swiss-German author, that points to something that interests me about translating from German, the sort of question of German and the multivalent meaning of the adjective German when it refers to Swiss-German or Austrian-German.
Maybe that's actually kind of a good entryway before we talk about translation reviews. Could you deconstruct the notion of Germanness for the audience?
I think that the adjective German, it shares, you know, for example, with French, the idea that there's also other political, geopolitical locations that speak a form of French. And so when you say French literature, the usual tendency is to talk about Francophone and to distinguish that from the political boundaries of France itself. But in the case of German and Germany and German as an adjective, there's even more, I think, interesting question in terms of more interesting diversity because of the fact that the word Deutschland, for example, existed as a concept and as an aspirational designation before any political entity that was called Deutschland existed. And there was much debate in the 19th century about what Deutschland actually should and would include. And so I think by association, Deutsch, as in German, when you speak of German literature, someone like Gottfried Keller, the Swiss-German author who was very proud of being Swiss, was also very, very insistent that he write in standard German and be considered, you know, a part of German literature, that his work be considered a part of German literature, whereas many of his contemporaries would insist on writing in, trying to reproduce Swiss dialect in writing, in literary form. And, you know, you could say similar things about Austrian, much of Austrian literature, including, for example, Franz Kafka, who was Czech as a native Czech speaker, but wrote in German, even which at the time is also sometimes people speak of him as Austrian literature because that was part of the Austro-Hungarian Empire. So these are unresolved sort of issues. And to speak of Germanophone or German language literature often is more precise but less elegant.
That's great. Yeah, I think it applies also to English literature. What is English, right?
Of course, of course.
To a lesser extent, German is also a multicentric language. It's not like talking about Norwegian literature, so it's only Norway or Icelandic literature, right? Big tent that has many different aspects to it.
Just to finish up with that, I was drawn to this as a graduate student when I was studying in Germany and took a course on American literature in German translation. And I read a Mark Twain piece that started, says, you know, this is translated aus dem Amerikanischen. And they didn't say translated from the English. They said translated from the American.
There have been attempts, this is kind of maybe a sidetrack in the history of the U.S., of trying to call English American.
Oh, interesting.
American language, not English language. And the idea was to kind of assert a certain new identity separate from the British Empire. It didn't catch on, obviously, but it's really an interesting point to talk about the geopolitics and the nationalistic aspects of languages. I want to move on to the main topic. I want to talk more about translation reviews. And I have noted that you have published reviews of translated works in different venues. And I find your reviews very thorough and informative. So I have a few questions specifically about reviewing translations, different aspects, the do's and don'ts. First, in your view, does a good review of a literary translation have to consider or even be familiar with the source text and the source language?
That's an interesting question. And I will say I have only done reviews of literary translation from German, so from a language I'm also, you know, intimately familiar with. So the question of whether that has to be the case, I would answer it rather evasively and say, I think the type of review could be considered then good, as you say, is a good translation, have to know the source text. I think depends on what the aim or what the audience of that review is going to be. If, for example, the translation itself is intended for a, let's say, a broad general audience, but I would say a mainstream type audience, then I think a good review of that translation could in fact focus on the translation only and not have to have familiarity with the source language or the source text. The sort of venues and the sort of translations that I'm asked to review, I think there's always this sort of dual focus on both the translation as a standalone literary piece in its own right and the translation as the result of a process that has been...
A process of translating.
So that's, I think for that, in order to adequately or to do in a good way an assessment, a review of that sort, you do, there should be a familiarity with the source text. So I think
I like that. I like that distinction. So sometimes if you have a dual focus, yes, in this case, you need to know or be familiar with the source language and the source work. That translated work can also stand on its own. So in theory, you can review a book, a new translation of Tolstoy from Russian or a new translation of Naguib Mahfouz from Arabic, right?
Right. In fact, you could do an intralingual comparison. For example, this new translation of Tolstoy has this and this, shares this and this aspect with these three other English translations of Tolstoy. And you could, you know, assess it that way. That would be an interesting way of going about it. Or again, much as you would just assess a literary work in your own language.
Maybe we're talking about some canonical figures here like Tolstoy. So yes, I see that a lot in translation reviews, especially the classics and,
right,
big literary names. They are always compared to, not only to the original, if it's a classic work, it's always compared to other translations. Right. So nobody who reviews a new translation of Dante or Ovid talks about necessarily the original.
Right, right.
They talk about, what does this translation do in comparison to all the previous one or some of the major previous translations, right, that came before it?
Right. And in some way, that's then like saying, you know, how does this dish that I'm eating in this restaurant compare to my mother's cooking? It's not the original recipe that we're talking about. It's something that you are familiar with, perhaps from earlier. And as you say, that then does implicitly lead to a questioning of original and versus derivative.
Great. Well, in your discussion, you mentioned a good translation in reviewing a translated work. So I'm wondering, in your view, does a good review of a literary translation have to have an explicit philosophy of what a good translation is? Good, quote unquote.
Yeah, that's another interesting question. I think the key word there, I would say, is explicit. I think there's always an implicit sense or philosophy of what a good translation is in a review of a translation. And I think it can be helpful if there's some gesture, some acknowledgement, some self-reflection on that within a review. But I'm not sure it has to be explicit. Again, I would say certain audiences and certain fora would be more open and interested in that sort of more explicit acknowledgement of a philosophy of what translation is than others. So I would say I have written reviews where I felt that are more extended reviews that are inviting that. And I've written ones where that's less, seems to be less what is being asked for. So I think good in that case would be measured against what one's sense of the context of the review is and the audience potentially. Does that make sense?
It does make sense, yes. And again, maybe not to belabor the point of what is good. It seems to be an all-purpose adjective. So how does a good review of a literary translation differ from a good review of a non-translated literary work?
Yeah, I think that takes us back a little bit toward this idea of reviewing a translation without necessarily acknowledging or knowing the source language. I think in that case, it would differ very little. In fact, that you're really talking about, let's take again Tolstoy as an example. If you're speaking of the translation as in its own right, I think there's very little distinction. I mean, you're not necessarily reviewing the value of Tolstoy's work that's being set as a given, basically. And you're just talking about how that's coming across. So I think you really are then just celebrating Tolstoy again, in a way, if you're not referencing, if you don't know Russian, for example, and you're not referencing the original. Now, I think if you were to, as you say, as people do, compare it to earlier translations, then it goes beyond a literary review of a new creative literary work, let's say.
Are there any aspects, certain things that you don't like to see when reading a review of a translated work?
There is a sort of a almost AI type group of adjectives. And of course, now I'm not going to be able to think of ones, but that people tend to use and that seem to be more generic in their application than in like considering the work they're actually talking about. I don't know, something like the smooth and seamless and readable and...
Very good. Apropos of that, I have a small corpus of translation reviews and I looked up some of the most frequent adjectives. And yes, you are right. Smooth and seamless and readable are there on the list.
They're all in there? Yay!
Yes. And maybe you can give me your judgment of which ones you like more or which one you don't like.
And I should say, too, I've probably used them all myself as well.
So. All right. So besides smooth, seamless, and readable, I have sensitive, exquisite, apt, fluid, fluent, muscular.
Muscular?
Ah. Yeah, deft, nimble, even though nimble tends to be not nimble translation, but nimble rendering. There is a bit of a collocation here.
Yeah.
Elegant, graceful, to name just a few. Anything here that you particularly like?
Yeah, to me, it's all contextual. I don't, as I said, I've probably used them all before and I've thought in using them that I was being particularly apt to use one of them. And then there would be cases where I think they're particularly inappropriate or misused. Again, something, let's take, for example, the Dodder or the Strudelhofstiege. It's a notably, I'll say, complex, structurally complex novel and extremely long, of course, as well. And so 80%, let's say, of the adjectives you just went through probably would be, most of those would be, I think, inappropriate in describing it. And again, would be trying to, I mean, whether or not they were true, in other words, if they were true of the translation, they would be inappropriate from my perspective, because that's not what his novel is. And it really then is, this gets back to the implicit philosophy of what a good translation is. It's more about that than about the particular work in question. So it's hard to say beyond that. I mean, I'm hesitant and it's hard for me to say, you know, categorically, this adjective is
No, I take your point. Point well taken. It's contextual. None of these adjectives, and actually, in fact, all of them are meant to be positive, right?
Right.
It's all contextual in that sense. It seems to me, though, that certain adjectives like fluid and fluent and smooth and seamless are kind of like coded references to the fact that the translation does not show her hand.
Exactly, yes.
The notion of invisibility. It's the translation reads as if it was written in the receiving language, does not yes. bear any traces of yes. being a translation. And I did an episode about translationese before.
Yes, exactly. And that's what that was the point I was making. If you take a text like Die Strudelaufstiege, which is explicitly and intentionally, and some would argue with a greater plan, not all of that, people would think if you said the translation isn't any of that either, the implication would be negative. But in actual fact, that would be a positive and an insightful review of that particular work. So there's that interference between those two, between what people think traditionally of the role of a good translation and literature that itself is not that way.
Well, you know what, we like in corpus linguistics, it's the most frequent occurrences of a certain word is not necessarily the most important thing. Sometimes what is not frequent but salient is important. Mm. So some of the adjectives I found that are actually very positive but not very commonly used, I only found them once or twice in the corpus. Wondrous, in a wondrous translation.
Ah.
Ebullient, marvelous. So clearly these are like high praise, as yes. opposed to just apt and generic deft or,
right.
or readable.
And I think those adjectives differ maybe in they're really celebrating the achievement of what has been done, as opposed to talking about the, let's say, the concrete reality of what has been done.
Raising the visibility of the translator, acknowledging the agency of the translator in the
right, past. That's true. Yeah. Right?
There are negative adjectives, clearly negatives, and I'm just going to mention a few here. Clumsy, ponderous, flat. Flat is perhaps the most common one that I found. So there is a spectrum of positivity and negativity in how we reference translation. So words are our tools. We should use them carefully. And as you said, it's all contextual. And sometimes even the most positive or positive seeming or sounding adjectives are inappropriate depending on the nature of the work itself and its complexity and so on. But let's move to some adverbs. This is kind of a linguistic view here. It seems to be a limited register of how translations are reviewed. You know, there are certain common adjective and certain structural adverbial phrases. For example, ably translated, competently translated, superbly translated, expertly translated, skillfully translated.
For me, also implicit in a review of a translation is the question, even if the reviewer is really given free hand to address this or not, I think often or almost always implicit is a sense of the audience of the review wanting to know the justification for publishing, for offering this translation. Again, these tend to, I think, point to the value of having this translation appear, of producing this translation. If something is competently. Yeah.
What is the expression I'm looking for here? Damning by faint praise.
Right.
Skillfully makes it sound like it's just a technical skill, you know, not an act of co-creation.
Yes. Yes.
You know, kind of co-creating a literary aesthetic experience. Some of them are kind of humdrum, you know.
Ably is a little more positive than competently, I would argue, but the implication there is that there could be more. There could be a better translation, as opposed to this in its own right is worthy of reading as an accomplishment, as an achievement.
Right.
Apart from the degree of, let's call it, you know, fidelity with which it adheres to the original, it's these older notions of a
fidelity and
correspondence, right? But this is worth reading in its own right. Whereas something competently translated, the implication may be you can do better or, as a reader.
Maybe it's not intended, but it can come across to the sensitive reader that way.
Yes.
Now, to sum up our final thoughts here, what should a good translation review entail? And equally important, what should a good translation avoid when reviewing a literary translation? And let's say we are focusing here more on literary translation.
Yes, exactly. That's a good point to make.
The creative aspects of translation.
Yes, that's nicely. Yeah, I like that idea, the co-creative aspects. I think for me, a good literary translation needs to go into the medias in res, right, into the things itself and offer specific examples.
That's a good point. Being concrete, what is it about the way they translate humor, play on words, how they manage cultural references and specificity,
right,
ambiguity, or and so on?
I think should give a taste of the dish that's being discussed, as it were. So that to me is probably the most important feature of reviews that I find interesting. And it reminds me of something someone once said about a conference. I was at a conference presenter. There are those who try to impress you with the sort of interest and erudition and uniqueness of themselves as presenters. And then there are those who you come away from a presentation saying, wow, that presenter impressed me about the erudition and uniqueness and interest of the thing that they were presenting about. And so to me, this is not a concrete criterion, but more of a sort of philosophical one, where I come away from a translation review thinking, wow, that sounds, I feel I have a
you have gained an appreciation of
a good appreciation for what is being reviewed rather than an appreciation for the person reviewing it.
And right. But for the person doing the creative act of translation, you also get, you know, so.
Exactly. Yeah. There's that dual, you're right. There's that dual subject or that dual, that's that dual level I was talking about earlier, the translator and the work. In this case, yes, more the translator and the translation.
How about anything that perhaps should be avoided or reduced or eliminated when reviewing a translated text?
Many of the adjectives and adverbs you mentioned.
You are right. I have. So this is a problem with doing corpus linguistics. You get seduced not just by the examples. You want to read the whole thing. You know, if you find a particularly well-phrased expression, you want to read where that came from. And some of the best reviews I have read don't actually rely on these, I'm going to call them cliches, like translated competently, translated smooth, seamless, right? They have their own more sophisticated way of talking about the translation, raising the visibility of the act of translation and spotlighting the translator's art and craft without delving into this repository of cliches. So I have an example here, actually. This is this translation successfully negotiates the nuances of a complex text and excels at conveying its subversive humor. So it doesn't use any of the cliches, right, of adjectives and adverbs that we talked about, but it's actually specific.
Yeah.
It talks about the nuances of the complex text and the way the translator handles particular kind of dark humor, complex, subversive humor.
A follow-up to that would then be an example from the translation, which one could appreciate, I think, even if, for example, one isn't familiar with the source text language.
No, that's a great point. Always, I'm always, you know, when I see examples, I want to say, oh, this is great. That actually makes it concrete, not just an abstract review or discussion.
And I hate to bring AI into this, but again, this is the other threat, that there's just a repository of data that can be inserted and manipulated, but it lacks that specificity to a particular context.
Right. Well, one more thing, one of my pet peeves about reading translation reviews, to me, if there is something that we should avoid in reviewing a translated work, it should be the focus on mistranslation. You read a review of translation, it's in fact, if it's a negative one, it's a review of mistranslation. It's just a laundry list of what the translator got wrong, not what they got right.
Right. That's an easy way of also elevating your own, the reviewer's status, to say the implication is I am the authority here and I know better.
Look at me. I'm so competent in the language, much more than the translator. And I can pick on, or nitpick really, on these infelicities or mistranslations and so on. It's just a very reductive view of translation.
Yes.
You know, so maybe arguably, there is a, at least in the translator's review, the translator did not get a particular word right or the connotations. Maybe not. Maybe it's open for debate.
Right.
And maybe what the so-called mistranslation is actually a creative act of rendering the contextual tone and style.
Exactly. And I think what you're saying also, it's, I think in a good translation review, there's an acknowledgement that choices are both potentially conscious and will necessarily eliminate other possible options. For example, in German, it's sort of a cliche of German that German literature that they use periods more sparingly than in English. So their sentences tend to be quite a bit longer. And so as a translator, you can choose to either reproduce the same punctuation and what then for an English reader would be noticeably and, you know, uncharacteristically long sentences, or
an act of foreignization. Yes,
exactly. But to criticize one or the other choice, or you could make shorter sentences and use more periods, right? But to criticize one or the other choice doesn't acknowledge that potentially, like, what is the result? And whether it's a creatively interesting result, and or whether it is something worth reading in its own right, along with the notion that a choice had to be made, one or the other.
Yeah. So maybe to sum up and kind of circle back to the title of this episode, how not to review a translation. Number one, you have to mention the name of the translator if it's a translated work.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
And avoid maybe well-worn phrases and cliches as much as possible, even though that's, as you said, kind of, it's very contextual.
Right.
But do not focus. Maybe that's the most important one. Do not think of a review of the translation as a process of error hunting, just focusing on the so-called mistranslation than the actual act of the translation itself and its myriad complexities.
Yes, I think that's very nicely summarized.
Really enjoyed talking to you, Hans.
Thank you very much for setting this up.
This has been an episode of On Translation. See you next time.